Hey, everybody. Jenna here from the Democracy Works team. We continue our conversation about climate change this week with an episode from the Climate 2020 podcast. This show is produced by The Years Project, a climate-focused communications nonprofit in New York City. The show argues that climate is the most pressing issue of our time, but is not receiving the attention that it should in coverage of the 2020 presidential election. So through this podcast, are putting it front and center, interviewing some of the leading journalists covering climate change, as well as some candidates and policymakers themselves. This episode that you are going to hear takes a bipartisan look at climate change. It features interviews with Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington State and former Democratic presidential candidate, as well as John McLaughlin, who is a longtime Republican pollster. So you can really see how climate change is playing out across both the Republican and the Democratic parties. If you like what you hear, you can find more at climate2020podcast.com or by searching Climate 2020 wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks to The Years Project for sharing this episode with us, and we hope you enjoy Climate 2020.
I said to him, I said, look, John, I'll tell you what. You just got a call from the White House. I'm Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And what I said to you is, you know, John, is it okay for me to say that climate change is a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese? He tried to not answer that question. I kept that up.
Oh.
To predict, and perhaps someday to control, changes in weather and climate is of the utmost importance to man everywhere.
When there is more carbon dioxide, the temperature gets warmer.
And it seems an open question, not a settled question.
It's not an open question. It's a settled question.
Obama's talking about all of this with the global warming and that.
The politicians have gotten away with not doing anything.
The election is about climate change, the great environmental crisis.
Time is up. Our house is on fire.
They will not get away with it any longer.
Hi, and welcome to Climate 2020, a podcast about climate change and the 2020 election. I'm David Gelber, a founder and chairman of the climate media company, The Years Project.
And I'm Jeff Nesbitt. I founded Climate Nexus, a climate communications group.
You know, I'm really excited this week because, Jeff, you are going to be speaking with Washington Governor Jay Inslee, and I'll be talking to one of Donald Trump's, you heard right, one of Donald Trump's lead pollsters.
I'm still amazed that you pulled that off. He sat here and he talked climate with you. I mean, that's amazing.
And then we joined hands and sang Kumbaya together. But first, let's bring our audience up to date on what's been happening this week with climate and politics.
So ExxonMobil is going to trial. They're up against the Attorney General in the state of New York. And the Attorney General, what she's alleged in her complaint is that Exxon kept two sets of books. One that shows the real cost of climate change, and another one that downplayed that cost.
Is the hope here that somehow this trial is going to make these fossil fuel companies address the real cost of climate change?
Well, I think this is one of the reasons why everybody is paying such close attention to this trial. Go back in time, and you look at the tobacco wars and the litigation strategies against the tobacco industry. And by the way, can I just say many of the same attorneys who are representing the oil and gas industry—
Used to represent the tobacco
industry. So they know this—
What a coincidence.
So they know this issue quite well. And so there are a couple of things going on here. One is the discovery process, though the state attorney general, as well as other AGs like Maura Healey in Massachusetts, are looking at unearthing documents that can explain, you know, a quarter century of how these—
Of misleading documents.
Of these— that this industry has dealt with this issue.
We actually spoke to a reporter covering the Exxon trial for the Drilled podcast, which is an investigative podcast about fossil fuel companies and climate change hosted by Amy Westervelt. And we're planning on getting Amy on Climate 2020 very soon to talk to us about the 2020 election. And we asked Drilled reporter Emily Gertz to update us on the trial.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Jeff. And I'd like to pick up on what you said there about two books. New York has a very strong law for prosecuting securities fraud, and that's what it's accused Exxon of in this trial. New York says that Exxon used one figure, a higher dollar amount, in public for assessing the future costs of climate regulations on its business. Internally, though, it used a lower number, and that had the effect of making the company look more valuable to investors than it really was. When this became clear in public, the stock price took a huge tumble, and investors lost collectively hundreds of millions of dollars. The state wants the judge to find Exxon guilty of fraud and to compensate its investors for the money they lost. And Exxon, needless to say, denies all these charges.
We're going to keep you updated on this Exxon trial. Meantime, one more item in the news. The Weather Channel is going to be holding a climate discussion with candidates. But two candidates so far will not be appearing. One of them is Donald Trump, not surprisingly, and the other is Joe Biden. That surprised me.
Jay Angelou talks a little bit about this in our interview with him for this week's podcast. The environment and climate issue is the weakest vulnerable point for President Trump in his reelection. So the Democratic nominee, whoever that is almost certainly going to want to use it against President Trump. The pollster you talked about says, no, we've got this covered. But I guarantee you the Democratic candidate, whoever that is going to figure this out. So if Joe Biden can't figure that out right now, before the first votes have been cast, then it begs the question, will they figure it out in the general?
You know, some people are going to say that the reason that Biden is ducking a conversation about climate change is because of his son's involvement with a gas company in Ukraine. I don't know if that's true. Biden certainly has been outspoken on the climate issue. But why he's ducking this one is something that we need to follow and maybe get an answer
next week. And David, that's a really good question. I mean, and we talked about this in previous podcasts. Is his entanglement with the natural gas company in Ukraine and the impeachment process, is it keeping him from talking about one of the most important issues of the 2020 campaign? It is a legitimate question to ask, and I hope other reporters will start to ask this question as well.
Climate 2020 is powered by Exelon, the nation's largest clean energy provider. Exelon stands with a vast majority of its 10 million customers who want cleaner air and affordable, reliable energy. For more information, visit exeloncorp.com. I spoke with one of Trump's top pollsters who gave us a pretty good idea of how Trump is going to handle the climate issue in the campaign for president this year. But coming up first, we're going to hear your interview with Jay Inslee, Washington's governor, who dropped out of the presidential race, but we still wanted to talk to him.
Well, it's interesting. Governor Inslee has become sort of the ghost of climate past in this election cycle. After he dropped out, most of the other candidates adopted some or all portions of his substantial climate plan, and he has become the voice that continues to demand that the Democratic candidates who remain talk about the issue. So we wanted to ask Governor Inslee how he thinks this plays out both in the Democratic primaries as well as the general election. Okay. Hi, Governor. This is Jeff Nesbitt. I'm the Executive Director of Climate Nexus. We've met several times in the past.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for doing this work.
A couple of interesting things in just the last couple of days I wanted to get your take on. The first is the Weather Channel. Just this week, they began to interview all of the major candidates about climate impacts in the United States. The only candidate who decided not to talk about climate impacts, other than Donald Trump, is Joe Biden.
As you know, I was encouraging him during the debate to be more aggressive on his proposals, particularly on the pace of progress that we need to make. The pace is daunting. The pace has to be much quicker than we would have thought a couple years ago because the science of this is advancing so quickly. So I would certainly encourage him to be to any particular forum where you could advance your vision. And I think that's important. It's important in part because the debates have not been as productive as we would have liked. In the last debate, not a single climate change question was asked. I think people intensely want to know what the candidate's vision statements are. I think voters have a right to know that, so I would certainly encourage everyone to look for every opportunity.
President Trump's weakness, his biggest weakness, and it's known as a wedge issue to political advisors, it's known as a winning issue to average voters, is the environment and climate. And so a candidate can, you know, can exploit that in a general election. So it makes me wonder if Joe Biden has actually thought about that.
There was a big tell when Donald Trump went out and claimed to be an environmentalist a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. And that was a tell to show that he even understands he's so vulnerable and weak on this issue. He knows that he's got no excuse for his terrible record. And I believe that you always go after your opponent at their weakest point with our strongest position. And I do believe it's on climate change because it's the biggest delta between the absurdity of climate denial of Donald Trump and the economic growth and positive optimistic message of a Democrat. So very much, I think we ought to make this a prime part of our strategy. And therefore, I'd encourage all candidates to make this one of the highlighted issues. There is no excuse. Donald Trump has no place to stand on this issue whatsoever. It's laughable what his position is. So we ought to really drive this right through the heart of the Republican intransigence on this, including Donald Trump's position. And I hope all candidates take that strategic position.
So I'm glad you raised that because we interviewed one of Donald Trump's top two remaining pollsters. He's gotten rid of most of his pollsters. But John McLaughlin, who's one of the two that remains, agreed to sit down with us and describe how they're going to try to deal with this issue in the general election. And the two things that he focused on, which will be in this week's podcast as well, they're going to hammer away at China. And the argument is that, why should the United States act if China is not going to act? The second big point was the economy. Why should American voters who are only making $50,000, $60,000 a year have to absorb $2,000 in increased energy costs? So they focus on the cost argument. If you were the candidate, or perhaps you're the vice presidential nominee to Mrs. Warren, how would you flip that on its head?
Well, I would say Donald Trump is a sucker for China. He's a loser when it comes to China, when it comes to climate change, because he has, in effect, given an excuse to China for inaction. He's opened the door to China to take no action on climate change, because the best excuse China would have for not acting on climate change would be if the U.S. does nothing. So he basically has taken our moral high ground away from us. If we act on climate change, we have a legitimate reason to demand China to move. If we don't act on climate change, we got no moral ground mm-hmm. to stand on. So I would say he's got the biggest loser attitude when it comes to this. Now, the fact of the matter, China is acting on climate change domestically. They're making significant efforts to reduce their dependence on coal-fired plants. And that's good news. But they need to accelerate their efforts, particularly in their international portfolio where they are financing fossil fuel plants around the world. So we have a lot of work to do to get China to accelerate their commitment, but you can't very well do that when you're not doing diddly squat in our own country. So no, I think Donald Trump has got the dumbest policy possible. If you want to command respect of China and be on a moral high ground, you got to get rid of Donald Trump so we can do that. That's number one. On the cost issue, look, we want to reduce costs ultimately for energy for Americans. And I'll tell you what, I would love Americans to get their gasoline prices down to zero. And that's what happens when you drive an electric car. And so we have plans in our state. We now have 50,000 electric cars in consumers' hands today. Those people aren't paying a penny for gasoline. And we believe that by putting in charging stations, increasing access to a way to finance electric cars and the original capital costs, we're going to drive energy costs down in transportation. Look, Trump wants to remain shackled to the gasoline pipeline to Saudi Arabia, where he wants to send our military, where we just have to spend billions from protecting the oil shakes and protecting the monopoly of the oil and gas industries.
Yeah. Let's imagine it's 2021 and there's a Democratic president. But absent, a clear majority in the Senate, so Congress is still divided, how far should the President of the United States go to try to address the climate crisis in 2021, absent the ability to move things through Congress.
Well, the president can do a ton through executive order under existing statutory ability. I believe the president has the ability to move dramatically to increase the acquisition and usage of electric vehicles. I think dramatic things can be done through executive order to reduce carbon pollution in the transportation sector. I think dramatic things can be done to eliminate the use of coal. Dramatic things can be done through efficiency in our appliances and the like. So there is a huge amount the president can do through existing statutory authority, using executive authority properly utilized. Now, Trump has abused that in the opposite direction. And fortunately, he's been so grossly incompetent and idiotic. I mean, his administration really cannot run a two-car funeral. And as a result, we basically have been able to stop him for the vast majority of things he's trying to do. But for a president who can tie their shoelaces, we can do a whole bunch through executive authority. And I would encourage presidents to use everything in their toolbox to do that, because we just don't have that much time. The science has indicated that this is going so much faster than we predicted.
So thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
You bet.
Okay.
Don't forget to vote.
Okay.
Get a good candidate.
Let me tell you about the second part of our show, which is really a bit unusual, in that I interviewed a guy who was helping the GOP form some sort of strategy on how to deal with the issue of climate change. You know, I started thinking about how the GOP is going to handle climate in 2020 after seeing a number of polls that say that younger Republicans care about addressing climate change kind of the way young Democrats do. We called up a GOP pollster who still works for President Trump to find out what he thinks of the Climate Leadership Council poll. His name is John McLaughlin. So, first of all, tell me who you are.
John McLaughlin. I am the CEO of McLaughlin Associates, and we do public opinion polling around the United States and internationally.
Well, you're kind of understating who you are, because you're actually one of Donald Trump's two main pollsters. Is that correct?
Correct, so far. so I survived the 2016 election. I'm still there today.
Well, but in 2016,
right.
My understanding is that the election came down. It was a very tight election.
Right.
And something happened in the days right leading up to Election Day,
right,
that you were central to.
Right. There was a polling team then, myself, Tony Fabrizio, Adam Geller, Mike Basilese, Kellyanne Conway. Our firms had split up the battleground states, and we were polling. We were trying to expand the map for the president. And our polls said it was going to be very close, very, very close. Brad Parscale, who's now the campaign manager, he has all the analytics. So we get on the phone, and Brad says he's certain we're going to win because the analytics were different in 2016 than they were, say, for 2012. So we had always polled looking at likely voters. So when you looked at the analytics, you didn't have quite the same turnout among younger voters, among minorities, and there was more of a heartland turnout for Donald Trump.
So your advice was?
Do everything you can to win the election, because it's going to come down to turnout on Tuesday.
The American people have spoken, and the American people have elected their new champion.
And he did it because he was going to, you know, unlike these other books, they said, oh, he didn't think he could win, or was surprised. No, it was, the campaign was busting their butt to make sure he won. He was going to five or six states a day. And it was, he was calling into radio stations. He was doing social media posts. He was really working hard.
So when they write the history of the 2016 campaign, you're going to be more than a footnote.
Well, we'll see.
Now, you know, John, at this point, some of the, I'm sure many of our listeners are wondering why Donald Trump's pollster is appearing on a podcast dedicated to the issue of climate change. One of the reasons that we wanted you to come in is that one of your peers, mm-hmm. another Republican pollster, Frank
right.
Luntz,
right.
has a poll which makes some conclusions which are surprising to a lot of people. Because the main thing that he's saying is that there's a huge generational divide that's opened up among Republican voters over the climate issue. Mm-hmm. He's saying that a majority of young Republican voters are more likely to see it as human-caused and want the government to reduce the threat of climate change. What's been your reaction to Frank Luntz's conclusion?
Well, I would find that that part is true. I mean, I think younger voters generationally, they're more sensitive to climate change. But most voters, when we've taken national polls and asked about this, not just for President Trump, but for other candidates as well, two-thirds of the voters believe climate change is real and that's growing. And it's the difference becomes, what can you do about it? And what happens is when you start telling people it's a tax or that it's going to cost somebody their jobs, whether on a farm or in manufacturing, all of a sudden the support drops. So the solution part of this—
Which I guess you would say is why Democrats have been reluctant to actually come out in favor of a carbon tax.
Absolutely, because they lost the House on this. And they lost the House on it in 2010. And then they lost the House again or when they tried to take it back in 2014. A lot of those carbon taxes were a big issue in individual races. I mean, when they quantified that carbon tax, the Heritage Foundation had a study that said it was $1,200, $1,300 to the average household. Now, to an average household where you're making $60,000 or less, that's a lot of money in a year.
So Obama's talking about all of this with the global warming and that, and a lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax. I mean, it's a money-making industry.
So okay. President Trump has said that the climate may be changing, but it's not because we're burning coal, oil, and gas. He said that. Mm-hmm. He's also called climate change a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese to undermine America's industrial strength. So let's say you get a call from the White House, because you do. You get calls from the White House all the time. I mean, you're talking to the president, you're talking to the White
House
folks. Well, more than once in a while. So suppose that they ask you whether Trump's position on climate change is hurting his chances for re-election, that position that says that it's basically a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese. What would you tell him?
You have to look at the other side of that.
No,
I would tell him people do support his position on China. He has a more aggressive position because there's a broader picture on China. Because people think that China's been unfairly, you know, the overall trade practices, they've been unfair with us. And they think that Donald Trump is finally doing something about it where they believe China was taking our jobs. But
John, I need a straight answer. I want to give a speech somewhere. I got a big event in Cleveland tomorrow, right? In the heartland, the industrial heartland. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to have all those Trump people yelling my name. And I want to tell them again that climate change is a Chinese hoax designed to undermine American industrial strength. Is that okay, John?
The difference would be if Donald Trump said
to Donald Trump.
No, but I'm telling you, the heartland of America trusts him to protect their jobs and their futures. And if he was the one who negotiated the deal, whether it was to reduce climate change, that would protect jobs, American jobs, and protect the American consumer, particularly the working consumers, they would trust him that it would be a good deal. But the last one wasn't.
In your view.
Well, in his view.
The overwhelming majority of climate scientists, and you know this, would say that the consequences of burning oil, coal, and gas— which is to say global warming, is not a matter of opinion. It's a scientific fact, okay? What would you say to the climate scientists about that? Would you acknowledge that?
I would say you have to do a lot more education of the American public. If that's your finding, that's what's true, they really better educate the American public what the consequences are.
Do you think that President Trump helps educate the American public on the dangers of climate change by saying it's a hoax?
He said what he said to deal with China in that statement. So
I don't understand what you mean by that. He said it was a hoax.
He said it, but he said the statement you read, the quote you read, it was about perpetrated by China. He knew we had a bad deal with China, and he's given to making remarks that are abrasive.
He said the science is a hoax.
Right.
That's what he said.
He said that in reference to what he was making.
Was it okay for him to say that?
He's getting the result he needs to get done so that the economy is growing. A lot of people don't like his style, and a lot of people don't like what he says, but they like the results.
You don't think that climate is going to be a problem for the Republicans in the 2020 election. Is that what you're saying?
Right now, not from the extreme position the Democrats are coming from.
The Democrats are now advancing an extreme $100 trillion government takeover called the Green New Deal.
And because
extreme
of the,
position,
right? Because
what's the extreme position?
No,
of the
because Democrats? Of because of the costs of the Green New Deal.
But I'd rather not talk about it tonight, because I don't want to talk them out of it too soon.
because I love campaigning against the Green New Deal. I want them to make that a big part of their platform.
And there's those people that believe the market would do a better job if it's pointed in that direction. On the other hand, when you talk about government regulating something and you're talking about, you know, higher taxes, so, and it's significant higher taxes. So we agree on that. And people would actually have to sit down and actually talk this through to get the president and Congress all on the same page. But if they started talking about it, I can guarantee if Donald Trump would tell him he could do a better deal for the United States and probably be more effective on climate
change. Well, I think
he's
one of the worst negotiators I've ever seen. But I'll tell you what, let's end on a note that we really can agree on, which is that the Democrats have been playing footsie with this issue in terms of avoiding issues of cost. I think you're completely right about that. Jeff, your reaction?
Basically, you're hearing the contours of how President Trump is going to prosecute his reelection campaign in 2020, especially around this issue of climate change. He's going to make two points. One, why should the United States do anything when China is the worst actor on the climate issue and carbon emissions? So why should we do anything? That argument's been around for a while, but it has some salience politically. And he's also going to make the argument that why should anybody in the United States try to mitigate this issue and foist these costs onto American consumers, which is also a talking point that's been around for quite some time. So the question is, are both of those talking points salient in 2020 now? And is the Democratic nominee going to figure out a way to deal with this?
And so the argument to somebody who's making $60,000, $70,000 that climate is going to cost you $1,500 or $2,000 in taxes is a potent argument, whether it's true or not.
It is if there's a carbon tax. I mean, for instance, you know, if there were to be a carbon, which is we talked earlier in the podcast about the Climate Leadership Council, their preeminent position is that a carbon price will impose a cost. But they plan to give all of that money back to consumers. So 70-80% of American families will see a $2,000 check that more than covers their costs.
Yeah,
they're actually going to make money.
Answer.
And so people are starting to actually try to deal with this issue.
Yeah, it's really, really an important point, Jeff. You know, there's some talk about if there is a carbon tax, that money should be used for infrastructure and for research and so on, which is something that always appealed to me. But I can see that politically, the smarter thing to do would be to return the money to individuals. Climate 2020 is produced in association with the Years Project, funding provided by Exelon, that believes that confronting climate change is essential to maintaining the strength and prosperity of the cities it serves. That's why the Exelon Foundation launched a $20 million climate change investment initiative to fund entrepreneurs finding new solutions to fighting climate change. For more info, visit exelonfoundation.org.
The show is hosted by me, Jeff Nesbitt.
And me, David Gelber.
Jamie Kaiser is our associate producer. Sean Marquand is our sound designer and composed our theme music. Janet Babin is our executive producer. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Climate2020Pod. You can subscribe now in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And please don't forget to rate us on iTunes. You can also visit us at Climate2020Podcast.com for more information.
All right, that's it for us. Join us next Thursday for the latest on climate change and the 2020 election. Thanks for listening.